Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
And boy, howdy, is that really accurate?
We don't need no stinking lawyers.
We don't need no stinking lawyers. Well, sometimes you need a lawyer, but, you know.
But that better be a non-stinking lawyer.
Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzink's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander, Bunker de France across the way, a legend in our own time.
In my own mind.
And in Los Angeles, it's our good friend Todd Roberts. Howdy.
Another legend.
Howdy. Howdy, howdy. How are we?
We are all legends in our own minds. Bunker was at an event over at the Mezcal movie set this morning and afternoon. Where they were doing a Legends Weekend. What was that all about?
Well, it was kind of like a Valentine's Day thing. They do on weekends when they're not shooting, they have dulcet tours. Mm-hmm. And I guess they just wanted to add a little sugar to the tour this, you know, for the holiday or the special day. And so Legends are all people that worked on films out at Mezcal. And it's a great bunch of people, a bunch of old geezers like me. I think the youngest one there is probably in his 50s. But it's a lot of fun. And we spend more time talking to each other than we do the visitors, because we're all like telling each other lies about the movies we worked on.
Uh-huh, and some you didn't work on.
Oh, well, we've got to be. You know, people find it hard to believe that I worked on Birth of a Nation.
Uh-huh.
I didn't.
You're the third one under the hood.
Well, you know, that picture of John Ford, actually Jack Ford back in those days, riding across the river with his hood up because he couldn't see, and he's wearing glasses, you know, horn rim glasses. Well, I was the third hood behind him.
And he did not look at the camera, trust me.
No, you never saw me.
No, I know. All right, so let's get together, get going here on... We got us a Bunker's a Bunkhouse.
Yes, indeedy. Well, coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse is the good, the bad, and the bovine. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, as you all know, and I'm sick and tired of hearing it, I start with today, go back 3 days in time, go forward 3 days in time, but everything is in the past. And you're thinking, God, I wish this would pass. But you're going to suffer through it anyway. Now I'm going to start
Bunker's Comedy Corner,
and I'm going to do a little bit different this time. It's going to be a little long on the first date, and you're going to suffer insufferably. But then the other dates I kind of cut them short, so it still runs about the same time.
Okay.
Now on the February 11th, 1936. A bouncing baby boy, Burt Reynolds, came into the world.
Hey.
Now, what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to talk about his TV westerns. I'm going to run down his credits. And they're fairly extensive. The very first that I could find that he did was a thing called Pony Express. The episode was The Good Samaritan, 1959. He then did Riverboat series, that was 59 to 61, and he did 20 episodes. He was one of the regulars. Then he went back to working days. He did Johnny Ringo, the episode Stranger, and that was in 1960. Now that has an interesting twist, though. Charles Aidman plays a dude from the East,
mm-hmm.
but he'd spent time in Japan and learned karate, so he was there long before Kung Fu.
I see.
And that's, you know, but yeah, that's one of those footnotes that everybody wished had stayed in the foot. Alfred Hitchcock Presents episode, Escape to Sonoyta, it was a neo-western, 1966. Neo-western means it wasn't set in the old West, but it was in the modern West. But it's a pretty good episode. Dick Powell's Zane Grey Theater episode, Man from Everywhere, 1961. The Everglades episode, Lou Johnson and Trask. And you're probably asking me, that was a neo thing. I can't think of the last name. Anyhow, he was a swamp ranger. And that's all that about. Swampy. He did a Branded episode, How Now joined the human race, 1965. Then he did A Gentle Bend. He actually did the pilot episode, Voice from the Wilderness. I don't know if he played the bear or not. So that was 1967. He did Run, Simon, Run, 1970. That was a TV movie, and they shot the whole thing here in Tucson. In fact, they shot a lot of it out on Kenny Road. Another TV movie, The Cherokee Kid with Sinbad, 1996. That doesn't make many lists. Another TV movie, Johnson County War, 2002. That's a pretty good one. And then to finish up his TV movies, Hard Ground, 2003. That's all I can give you on Burt there.
Well, he was also, I know you were talking TV movies, but
I skipped Gunsmoke, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, you did.
And I had it down here. Well, that's okay. That's 51 episodes.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. He kept him out of the unemployment office. Now, on February 12, 1809, Abe Lincoln was born. You're going to say, who is he? Well, he was the 16th United States president. He led the country through the Civil War and abolished slavery. Enough said.
And by the way, kids, we used to celebrate Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday separate.
On their birthday. I don't recognize President's Day. I still celebrate their days.
Idiots in Washington decided, hey, we need to have 3 days off.
That was business. They wanted the long weekend.
Plus, there was always a sale going on, blah, blah, blah. But the point of the matter is, we used to celebrate Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday separately.
As we should.
As we should, instead of together.
Yeah, lump them together, it makes no big deal. You ask kids today, and they don't even know either one of them is.
Anyway. I know.
Maybe if we had them separate, they might know. Now, on the 13th of February, 2002, Waylon Jennings passed away. He was a singer, songwriter, and musician. And for those of you that are Waylon Jennings fans, if you go back to our past shows, we did, what was it, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we did a eulogy show of Waylon.
We had, this was back when we were still on commercial radio, we did an episode with Jesse Colin Young,
yeah.
Jesse Coulter, rather, mm-hmm. And they were married, you know.
Yeah.
And that was great. That was a good episode.
Yeah, both of them were good episodes. Now, what do we got? Okay, 14th of February, 1859. Oregon was admitted to the United States as the 33rd state, and this another pipsqueak state squeaked in there in 1912, and that was Arizona becoming the 48th state. On the 15th of February, 1898, the USS Maine exploded and sank in Havana Harbor, Cuba, killing 260 American seamen, leading to the Spanish-American War, and also we acquired the Philippines out of that, and we gave them back.
That was an interesting situation. It was there was a hearing held 100 years after the Maine explosion to look at all the evidence and to issue a report. And basically what it amounted to was the Spanish didn't blow the thing up.
It was the boiler.
It was the a candle got knocked over, or a light standard got knocked over in the coal coal area.
Yeah.
And that's what caught fire. And
then the boilers exploded. Mm-hmm. Got too hot.
That's exactly what happened. But William Randolph Hearst, who was the publisher of the San Francisco newspaper and bunches of others around the country at the time, he had a correspondent go to Key West, Florida, to monitor the situation there. And after a couple of days, the correspondent wired back to Mr. Hearst saying, sir, there's just nothing going on here. And Mr. Hearst responded back to his reporter, damn it, man, I want a war. You find something. And that's where we went.
He was interested in circulation.
He was interested. Yeah.
Okay, the 16th of February, 1804, United States Lieutenant Stephen Decatur leads a military mission that boards and burns the captured USS Philadelphia during the First Barbary War. Now you're wondering, why did I mention that? That's just because it's nautical, and I did it for Harry. And we'll finish out the week with February 17, 1864. This is kind of for you and kind of for me and kind of for Todd. Confederate submarine, the Huntley, becomes the first sub to sink an enemy ship after it attacked the USS Houston in waters off of Clarkston, South Carolina.
A friend of mine, who's a very good friend, and he's an archaeologist, he was on the crew when the Huntley was raised.
Oh, cool.
And he,
I watched the documentary.
He was the guy who opened the hatch after all that time underwater and discovered all the goodies that were discovered in there. And, man, that has got to be a sobering moment, if anything. But yeah, he didn't talk a whole lot about it, but I know he was there and he did it. And right now he's the guy in charge of the USS Alabama.
Well, think of that. Just made me think about the guys, the divers that went down on the Arizona, right afterwards.
Yep.
And you know what they had to see and witness.
Yeah. Not good.
Yeah, that's it. Bunker's Bunkhouse. We're closing the door for this week.
All right.
Yeah.
Kick
the cat out first, though.
Keep the cows in.
You don't want to leave him in the bunkhouse all week. He makes a mess.
Todd Roberts, what you got?
Well, I think that I think it's important to just continually remember that, you know, we talk about it, and which is great, but there's a lot of people that live it, which is, you know, keeping their connection to the pioneering spirit of this country and the Old West, and those that, shall we say, trails plowed under by Charlie Russell is a great example of it.
Sure.
It's keeping the spirit of the West alive through storytelling and music and food and art, and through, you know, just in general living it and trying to share it and teach it to younger people or those who don't know about it in general. And I think that, you know, we do this so often that sometimes I'm not saying we lose sight of why we do it, but I think we kind of take it for granted that well, we know about it, everybody knows about it. Well, no, there's a lot of people that don't even know where the toilet paper is in their house. So
my sentiment exactly. I look at each show as this virgin territory that nobody's gone down it before except us, and we're the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Well, and speaking of that, the wife and I watched a Western last night. Actually, it was a documentary, and it was called Legends of the Stagecoach. When was it done there? 2023, I think. And it was actually quite interesting. They took apart, didn't take apart. They showed us what, you know, how the coaches were. Only used the Concord stagecoach, which is the one that is most familiar to Western viewers. But there were bunches of others that were used.
They didn't use the mud wagons?
No. And so they talked about that. And one thing I learned that I did not know is that leather straps were used as the suspension for the stage. That was quite interesting.
Yeah, did they show how it was rigged? It was kind of like a baby cradle in a sling.
Yeah. In fact, that's what Mark Twain called it, was a cradle. The people who were producing it said, may not have really been a cradle. It wasn't the greatest ride there was. But, you know, anyway.
It beat a freight wagon.
Yeah.
Sitting on a hard seat.
And they also talked about, you know, the various stages that were used. They didn't show any of them, but just the Concord one. And, again, that's the most famous one. They talked about the bandits who held up stages. They talked about the people who rode messenger, and did talk about Wyatt Earp, one of his jobs with Wells Fargo. Yeah, there were two female drivers, One Charlie, and I can't remember her last
Charlie
name.
Charlie Parkhurst.
Thank you.
She was black and she smoked a cigar.
Well, and she only had one eye. Is that the right one?
Or and she was tougher to do.
That I don't remember about okay. her.
There was
they
one.
They did make a movie about her on cable.
Yeah.
And they used Dawn Lewis, the girl from the Cosby Show sequel. Where the kids went off
yeah,
car.
Yeah. Well, and the other one, and the name escapes me now, and I don't have that pulled up, but what am I saying here? They didn't know it was a woman when she died.
Until they did, it undressed her.
Yeah. And,
well,
I mean...
That's the ballad of Sammy... it's with Susie Amos made the movie.
Mm.
And Bo Hopkins was in it, the friend of the show.
Oh, yeah.
The ballad of Sammy Joe or the Ballad of Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was pretty interesting. They also talked about the bandits, like I said, the bandits who held him up. and how some of the drivers would say, hell no, I ain't stopping, and barrel the coach through. And the bad guys have to jump out of the way. Go ahead, Bunker.
There was, I can't remember the name, it's the Tom Mix movie. There was a Tom Mix movie where he's been framed. Anyhow, the bad guys have stolen the stagecoach and they're getting away. And he gets ahead of them and he throws a rope over a branch and drags this huge log up. And it's there, you know, he's got it dallied off. And as the coach comes by, he lets it go, and it lands right between the wheelers and the coach.
Ooh.
I mean, you know, that's stunts, man.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, there's no special effects. There's no CGI or AI.
They talked about Black Bart and suggested that he was probably the last of the stagecoach robbers because then came the era of the trains. And those coaches, they didn't run them off a cliff or anything. They got sold to smaller lines, smaller companies, mm-hmm. and they were used like shuttles, if you will. They did not mention, though, Belle Starr and her robbing. She and her hubby robbing that stage. I can't remember, was it Globe to Florence or Florence to Globe? And that was the route, I believe. Yeah. Anyway, and I think that was like 1895 or so.
Almost the end of the century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, it was pretty good stuff. Learned a couple of things here.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things, though, because they no longer promote stuff on television. There's nothing in the newspaper. There's nothing, you know, tomorrow at 4 o'clock, watch this. There's none of that stuff that promotes it or advertises it. I guess unless you just happen on it, you don't even know it's there.
No, I saw the Legends of the Stagecoach in a Facebook posting.
I thought,
well, hey, that looks pretty cool.
Word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I found it, watched it, and it was most enjoyable. And now we have to do something not necessarily enjoyable.
I enjoy it.
But for us, it's enjoyable because it brings in dollars. That's our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. We'll be right back.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Listen here, stranger. We don't stand for that kind of stuff around here.
Well, I've heard sheriffs talk that way before.
Well, this is one that means. What's your business?
My business? Oh, I don't know. I rob banks, hold up trains, do a little second-story work, play the saxophone.
Well, you better come with me.
I haven't got anything to do right now.
This is the Voices of the West.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker DeFrance, and Todd Roberts with you. No particular topic for today.
We need to buy 3 saxophones, one for you, Todd, and myself, and we can play musical interludes, like he said, when we're not doing second story.
I know, yeah, or robbing banks or trains, man. Yeah. Why not? And, I don't know, did Harry Carey ever play the sax, Todd?
Not to my knowledge, no. I'm sure he had many other talents.
Yeah,
but
no doubt.
I think Smiley Burnett, among all of the multiple instruments he played, was a master of the swinette.
I'm not even going to ask what that is because I just don't want to go there.
This is a family show.
Yeah. Hey, when we were talking about stagecoaches, there's another movie here that Bunker recommended for us to watch. It's called The Girl Stage Driver. It's a 1914 movie, silent movie, of course. And it was produced by the Eclair American Company, and it was filmed entirely in Tucson, Arizona, in 1914.
It's shot in the Sonoran Desert, the Tucson Mountains, Santa Fe, and Mission Santa Fe, and Tucson. And the print is you swear to God it was released yesterday.
Yeah, and you can find this movie on the YouTube, and it's called The Girl Stage Driver.
Here's a little more of a background on it. It was distributed by the Universal Film Manufacturing Company. The director was Webster Collison, who apparently did a lot of silent westerns.
Yeah.
And the cast was Norbert A. Myers, he's the sheriff, Edna Payne, she played Ruth, that's also the girl stage driver, and she was considered a pioneer in the early silent films in mostly the shorts. Will F. Shearer was Ruth's father and the old stage driver, and H. Henry Stanley was the El Paso Kid. And I couldn't find out who Black Mike was. They didn't give him any credit.
No, they only listed 4 credits.
And here's an odd thing. They had a review title called The Girl and the Stage Driver, and I'd never come across the term review title before.
No. Well, it's like working title.
That's what I'm figuring, mm-hmm. More or less. Maybe this was the title they sent out mm-hmm. for people to look at. Oh, man. There's a couple more things here if you want them.
Yeah, well, I was going to say this movie was lost. and discovered, of all places, in New Zealand in 2009. It's been put back and brought back to life, and highly recommend you watch it because these are the first films, man.
And I say, in many ways, it's almost like one of the first Death Valley Days episodes without sound.
Yeah. I just love the silent movies. The acting is, it's eyes and gestures and movements. I mean, that's...
The acting in it is very natural. It's not the stuff, you know, that we used to see on Fractured Flickers, you know, where they actually sped it up so that it would look, so that it would look silly.
Yeah. And it's not like a stage production either.
No.
But
in fact, this is what's so neat. There's a shot, the very first exterior, they come out of the house, and in the background, you're looking out across what I'm guessing is the southwest part of Tucson, down by San Javier.
Mm-hmm.
And you see off in the distance, you see a little shack, but you see a big tent. the people were living in tents. But what is so neat is there's a lady out there hanging up her laundry, and I'll bet you money she didn't even know they were filming.
And of course, the director's not going to say, cut!
Yeah, that's cinema verte.
Yeah, for sure, huh? Yeah.
The French would love stuff like that.
Yeah. Anyway, and that led me to go look up the number of films, silence, that were shot in Tucson, and there were a buttload.
Oh, well, you know, Eclair, like I said, 50, and then you found 50 more after that.
Yeah. They shot them around all around Arizona, to be honest with you. I mean, Tom Mix movie.
Seelig made headquarters up at Flagstaff.
Yeah, but the Tom Mix movie where it was the first aerial shots of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
That one, Douglas Fairbanks Sr. did a movie down in Nogales. Film down there.
They filmed something down at Oasa Dude Ranch down at the Black Bear Dude Ranch on the border.
Mm-hmm.
They filmed a couple of things down there.
Yeah, so there was lots of filming going on.
Well, you know what it was? Is they would, the Eastern companies, they would lease a train and they would just go cross country, stop, shoot for a couple of days, and move on. That's what Seelig did. Eclair came and they stayed a while, and there was others doing that. You know, it's just like when they were going to do the Squaw Man. They were going to do that up in Flagstaff. Mm-hmm. The blizzard stopped that.
Well, this movie, the girl stage driver, has been shown. It's been screened through Film Fest Tucson, mm-hmm. And again, it's around. Just got to look for it. And again, you can find it on the YouTube.
Just Google it. It's right there.
Yipper. And some other print copies available at some other sites. The YouTube is there. So
I don't get YouTube, so I have to Google everything.
You could. Well,
I could. I can't get on Facebook. They won't let me.
Yeah, and it's probably a good thing.
Well, but there's so many sites, and I'm doing research. That's the only way I can get to the site, and I can't get to the site.
Speaking of Facebook, we are looking at the Facebook page for Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.
Oh.
And, they're bigger than Stuttgart, as they say, used to say. And good stuff. And let's see, what else do I have shameless promotion-wise?
Well, you know, for one thing, I was telling folks out there at Mescal about the show, and I says, we've got shows going back to before 2013. You just have to, you got to work your way through the system.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully be able to find them.
The folks that were out there, mostly older folks, but like I was saying, these are people that, they loved Westerns. That's why they're out at Mescal.
Sure.
And you think, Why aren't there grandkids there? Forget about their kids. Their kids are a lost generation. Get the grandkids. They're still formable.
Well, let's see. I'm thinking about my 10, or is he 11 now, year-old grandson. And it was a chore to get him to watch a Western, and I had to find one with a train. So
exactly.
The first one I exposed him to was The Great Train Robbery. And
been hooked ever since.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily hooked, but he liked the train. He loved the train. And
makes little train movies.
Well, and he does make his own train movies on the YouTube, as a matter of fact. So
look him up.
There you go. Red Train Boy. Shout out to the grandson.
There you go.
All right.
You'll probably get a million hits now.
He has a buttload of hits on so many of his pieces that he's done.
You know, trains, you know, maybe we should do some train shows, because trains, people are fascinated with trains.
And why not?
Steam.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, big time. I know I'm always fascinated with trains, especially when I get to ride with Todd.
Yeah.
Well,
in the club car.
Yeah, the goal is to try to remember the journey, which is sometimes more difficult than we anticipate.
And and remember where the damn train is.
Yes.
And crawling off a train on your hands and knees, besides being embarrassing, is dangerous.
Yeah, you could get run over.
Yeah.
But now they got those concrete slabs that prevent you from falling onto the other track.
Oh, that's too bad.
Hey, we've been there.
I love trains. Well, you know, I worked for Amtrak for 19 months.
That you did.
I did.
So I should mention that the Hollywood Heritage Museum, you were talking about the first Western made in Hollywood. The Hollywood Heritage Museum is the barn that they rented by Cecil B. DeMille to make The Squaw Man. They didn't anticipate that they would also use it as somewhat to shoot some scenes. They thought it was just going to keep equipment in there. But they did, and they also shot stuff there, and that has been reopened.
Wow.
The first time in 5 years.
Hey.
So you can go there, and it is it's open again, and you know, you can go and experience it for its full birth.
Well, I know when I was there visiting you, we drove by it, but we drove by it so quickly, I'm still going back to my chiropractor for the whiplash.
Todd, you just hit on a new industry. Everybody can take their little cell phones and make their own movie while they're there.
Well, of course they can and should.
They should.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, you people are shooting videos all the time, constantly.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, most of them leave a lot to be desired. They lack in some way or another.
So there's a lot of the big stuff coming out of the big studios.
Yeah.
Yes. Very true. Very true. So I think it's, you know, it's kind of cool. I have not taken Nola there yet. I keep wanting to, but, you know, we are going to go. That's definitely the trip.
Sounds like promise or supper after the trip.
Yeah. Or drinks. It sounds like a good Valentine's Day thing.
Well, we're gonna be going to Mexican food tonight with Danny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he picking up the tab?
No. No, he usually picks the tab up, usually. But let's go have some Mexican. We haven't, you know, done that in a long time. We haven't done as much as we used to do because he's dealing with his health.
Yeah.
But he's better. And we're gonna go and have some Mexican food and have a little fun, as it were. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, and say hello to Danny from both of us.
Yeah,
and
our best.
I surely shall.
Yeah, for sure.
Surely shall.
We got to do our next commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts with you. We'll be right back after this.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ole Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
What happened to you?
Oh, we was having an argument with one of them cow steel nesters when a couple of fellas in the store jumped us from behind.
Who were they?
I don't know. Never saw them before.
More settlers, I suppose. They're coming in like grasshoppers.
This is the Voices of the West.
Back on Amel Francis, Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles. We, by the way, are in Tucson.
Yes.
So there you go. You didn't have grasshopper problems like that at the Chaparral, did you?
We never had a grasshopper plague, but we did on Young Pioneers. In fact, that's interesting. They had, I can remember when they shot that, they had three great big gritters. What they are is an airplane engine with the propeller, you know, like a fan.
Yeah.
They had three of them going, and I was helping. Everybody that wasn't in the shot was helping, and we were literally scooping plastic grasshoppers up, throwing them in there, and going there. And for years afterwards, they were still finding plastic grasshoppers down there.
I'll bet that hurt. If it struck someone.
Oh, it would have, yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't. No real grasshoppers were harmed in the shooting of this movie.
Exactly. We used this Grasshopper Stunt Association for this one.
That's good. Yeah. I watched last night what I think might be one of the worst westerns around. It's called The Way West, and this was a 1934 effort, starring Hal Talaferro, otherwise known as Wally West, otherwise known as whatever name he was using.
Talaferro was his real name.
I know, it was the real name. And let's see, Art Mix was in it. Bobby Nelson played the kid. And it wasn't necessarily that bad of a movie writing-wise or dialogue-wise. It was the production values that suffered big time. There's a fight between Art Mix and Wally West, or Wally Wales, rather, and it's not one of your standard cowboy fights. It's them rolling on the ground, trying to throw punches at one another, and going, and, you know, that's what you're hearing. And eventually, West takes or Wales takes command of the situation and pummels Art Mix.
As a good guy should.
As a good guy should. There's another scene in there where they did not edit correctly. Guys are chasing, I'm assuming the bad guys, and you see two riders going after them, and then in just a few moments you see a puff of smoke, and there's the third rider. Yeah, I'm thinking it was supposed to be a dissolve or something like that. That just did not work out. And the other one, Wally is supposed to be doing some dialogue, and they're on the woman who's delivering her lines, and then they do a cutaway to Wally, and he's just standing there, about 5 seconds maybe lapses, and then he smiles and starts up his dialogue.
You know, I want to put a footnote to that.
That's an editing issue.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, that's one of the things. A lot of these people, when they write about the old B-Westerns and stuff, and they'll rag on the actors.
Yeah.
And, well, Wally Walsh was so... Wait a minute. It was the production values most of the time. Because these guys, if you look at the bulk of their work, they were competent.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, especially because they shot them in series. There'd generally be like six or seven in a group they would shoot over the summer. And they start the very first of the series. That's where all the budget was done to sell that series into the theaters. And then by the time they got to the last one in the series, they didn't have any money left. So they were using mostly stock footage mm-hmm. and anything they could do. To
B-roll from past pictures.
Yeah. I love it. You can watch some of those things. There's one, I can't remember the movie. It was with Burt Lancaster and Robert Walker. I can't remember the name of the picture. It was Lancaster's first Western. And there was a corral scene down there. And one of the cowboys sitting on the corral is Bob Steele. He didn't work on the picture. They lifted a shot from another picture.
Uncredited.
And those guys didn't get residuals back in those days. But and nowadays, they still don't get residuals.
You speak from experience.
I know. If I had all the residuals... that I should be getting, we not only would have a television camera and a YouTube, we'd have our own studio.
Yep. There you go.
I just want a bar.
Oh, we'll have a bar in the studio if I get my residuals.
Now we're talking.
We'll have a special rail for you to put your foot up, and there'll be a little spittoon right there next to it.
Well, the good news is I already have the rail, and I already have the spittoon.
You just take it with you whenever you go to the
studio,
bar?
Then.
Well, every once in a while I get lonesome for it, and I go out to storage, and I pull it out, and I touch it and handle it and look at it and breathe on it, and then I put it back.
Okay.
And then Nola goes, I'll wait in the car, dear.
Now, what is your preferred chew?
I
trapped
there
you.
There were days
I?
That I had several good friends who did chew or snuff. Copenhagen, which I tried, and I basically lost my cookies. I've tried Red Man, and that's a little bit much because being dyslexic and you're not supposed to swallow. I swallowed and then I lost my cookies there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I finally graduated into what is called baseball chew, and that's strings of bubble gum that looks like tobacco. It's pink. You put it in your mouth and chew it.
Nice.
He's blowing tobacco bubbles.
It was tobacco bubbles, yeah. I never got into chew.
I did for years. I loved the snooze. I chewed Red Man and Beech Nut, and then the plug stuff, Bull of the Woods. I mean, that was blacker than the bottom of a coal mine. And it's funny, we were doing Wild Rovers, and we were doing a shot out there. It's a shot where everybody's riding out in the morning. The crew hasn't been dispersed yet. And I'm riding next to Bill Holden, and I pulled out, and I cut a chunk off, and he says, "What do you got there?" I said, "Bull of the Woods." He goes, "Oh my God, that's what I used to chew when I was up in Nevada. I want some. Give it to me."
Todd sent a very interesting email today, and it's about cowboy myths. Todd, you want to talk about that?
So, any of you out there that love your Gunsmoker, Rifleman, or Laramies, or Cheyennes, or Rebel, or any of the others. There was a specific episode on the Rifleman of a rattlesnake that got into the bedroll of Lucas McCain, being Chuck Norris. But this deals with, maybe we call it a legend, a cowboy myth of cowboys who would take their lariat and place it around them, around their bedroll,
yes.
And that a snake would not cross over that. So
heart of your belly.
This is, the video is from 1955, 56, from the TV show You Asked for It, which my father said to me many times. They had a guy there who was known as a naturalist and an outdoorsman, and he showed up with about 8 or 9 snakes, all different rattlers, and they arranged the rope on the ground, on the dirt, on the sand, and then they dumped out the box with all the snakes in it, and the snakes fell out, and they were all inside the loop of the rope on the ground. And he said, "Well, now let's see if they make them. You know, if they're imprisoned by the rope, or are they going to make a mad dash and get out?" Well, they made a mad dash and got out, and there's not a snake left in that circle. It's about probably 6 feet tall, maybe 6 feet long, probably 4.5-5 feet wide, and there's not one snake left. And he goes, "Well, that's the end of that myth."
So, stampede, the snakes are out.
Snakes, one thing we do know, snakes, they come out in the heat when they're cold, they also get too hot often.
Yep.
So they like to cut off somewhere. Snakes, you know, that's why they will crawl into people's bed, into your boots. They'll crawl into your bedroll. They'll crawl into a dark corner in your home if they get in there. My mother, years ago, when my parents had a house in Palm Springs, you know, there was a lot of wildlife around that house. It was at the top of the street, the last house on the left, and there was everything. There were coyotes, and there were squirrels, and there were deer, and birds, and everything. And one day, she goes out to check the mailbox in the driveway, and there's a little baby rattler. And she's like, "Oh, shoo, shoo, you, shoo." Like sitting there, you know, like just totally chilling out, not wanting to move. And so she goes past him, gets the mail, comes back out, goes back in the house, because she would garden early in the morning, then late in the afternoon. But from basically 10 to 2 or at least 11 to 1, maybe 2, she would stay in the house because it was too hot. The highest part of the sun's arc, hottest on the surface of the earth. So she would take a break. Well, she was sitting in the house, kind of fuddling around, doing little things here and there, and then she thought about that baby snake again. She went out there, and there he's sitting. He still has not moved. He's just sitting there, and so she gets a broom or something, and she, you know, kind of nudges him, and he starts to rattle his rattler, and he's getting upset and so forth. And she's like, "You've got to go. Go away. Go away." And and she goes back in the house. Well, she does this now again. She wastes a little while, an hour or so, goes back out. He's still there, and she's like, "Well,
reading a newspaper, having a cocktail."
Yeah, should have brought iced tea. Yeah.
She decides that this is so so typically of my mom. She decides that she wants to end his life, and she's going to take him to Bob the taxidermist, and she had a lot of taxidermy from Bob. And so she, I don't know what gloves she had, but she had gloves that she was confident enough that she couldn't get snake bit. So she got those gloves on and grabbed that snake by the head and put him in a bag, put him in a Ziploc bag, and
wow.
She took him and put him in a bucket of water.
Okay.
She was going to drown him. So she put him on a bucket of water, and then on top of, she filled the bucket all the way to the top, and then she put something, covered the bucket, and put the snake in there and thought he would drown. comes back 2 hours later. He's still awake. He's still in there. He's still alive.
So she wakes him
in a couple hours. No change. He's still alive. So now she decides to get those gloves again. She takes them, puts them in the Ziploc bag, wraps it up, and puts it in the freezer.
There you go.
And goes into the freezer. And probably 3-4 hours later, she checks on, thinking that he'd be dead. No, he's still alive. He's not moving that fast, but he's still alive.
Yeah.
So she puts him in the freezer and forgets about him. And about 6 months goes by, and my dad, who never went into the kitchen, you know, other than, you know, to get a glass of milk and a cookie, but couldn't boil water to save his life. And he goes into the freezer. He was looking probably for, he loved those chocolate popsicles, the fudge. And he goes in there and he can't find them. He's digging around in there, and he comes across, he's like, what is this? What is this? An old piece of chicken? What is that? What is that? So he pulls it out. He's like,
oh, no.
Lynn! Lynn! And she comes out of the, out from the back, you know, towards the front of the house in the kitchen. Yes, honey, what is it? There's a, you have a snake in the freezer. She goes, yes, and you can't eat it, so put it back and leave it alone. It's not yours. And
that's good.
She showed up and took it to when he, about 6 months later, the clock started ticking in her head. So she took it, put it in a cooler, drove it to Bob, and Bob stuffed it. And I have it in my house.
Oh my God.
On a tree stump.
Oh,
in my house. Stump.
And on that note, we're going to take our final commercial break here.
Rattlesnake stuff.
I know, I did. Final commercial break here on Abel Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Los Angeles. It's Todd Roberts with his rattlesnake. We'll be right back.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
I'm Mr. Ed.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Sheep herder, eh? Yes, sheep herder. You know, I never did like sheep herders. And something seems to tell me I ain't gonna like you.
Well, I guess it's going to be mutual.
Look here. This town ain't gonna be big enough for me and you.
Then if I were you, I'd start moving.
Oh. This is the Voices of the West.
Back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France. Todd Roberts with you. Tell them snake stories. And,
is that the Andrews Sisters?
No, that would be... It's Beat Me Daddy, 8 to the Bar. Or 8 to the Bar, I think, is the song. Is the group. It's called the Cow Cow Boogie.
Yeah, I reckon they did it.
It's no, they didn't originally. I saw... God, this must have been on... what's the movie channel? Turner Classic Movies. Eons ago, when they played one of these shorts.
Yeah, the cartoon thing.
It wasn't a cartoon. It was actual film that they had.
But the cows.
The cows were doing the song, yeah. And I found who did it originally, and I can't find it anymore. But anyway, I thought it was a cute song, and so there we go.
Well, they did it in Three Amigos. They did that in Three Amigos.
Yes.
When they're singing by the campfire, and all the critters come in and join along.
That's right.
And they had a singing sidewinder.
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact.
Sammy the singing sidewinder.
Well, I have another piece of news for us.
Okay.
The Saugus Cafe, which closed on January 4th of this year, has reopened.
Yay.
Just about 10 days to 2 weeks later.
Fantastic.
And, you know, it's just it's a great spot. It was opened first in 1888 by James Herbert Tollfree and was called the Saugus Eating House. It officially became the Saugus Cafe about 11 years later, and it moved out of the train station in 1916 and across the tracks to a location that's where it is now, basically. The area was becoming a great spot for filming location,
yes.
For Westerns especially. John Ford, W.E.W. Griffith, Douglas Fairbanks, Mary Pickford, Charlie Chaplin, Theodore Roosevelt, William S. Hart were all patrons of the restaurant.
So was I.
And so were you, and so was I, and so was my mother. I took Noah there. It was always pretty good, and it's back open. And so that's it's been there 140 years, and I'm glad we didn't lose it.
I am too. That's a place where I think probably anybody that worked cowboys in the movies had coffee there at one time or another, generally quite often.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll throw in another one for you. The original Pantry Cafe has reopened.
Good.
In downtown Los Angeles.
Good.
On the corner of 9th and Figueroa. And it's just an amazing place. They know how to feed you there. There's no liquor.
Yeah.
But, I went there. I've been there dozens and dozens of times. I've taken Nola. I have a lot of friends that liked it there. My good friend that, of course, Harry knew, Sheldon Volk, used to love going there. You know, I think it's the best breakfast in the city.
Yep.
Not trying to slight DuPar's Farmer's Market or Felipe's Original French Dip for breakfast. They're both great, but That was my favorite.
Yep.
And Kelly used to always have to tell the story of when you'd go there and you'd be sitting and you'd listen to people anywhere near you or around you. You'd say you can always tell the ones who've never been here before.
Because they're all listening.
A question for you.
Why is that, Shelley? Say, well, because they come in here and they sit down and the waiter comes over and asks them what they want for breakfast. And, I'd like this, the eggs, or I'd like the pancakes or whatever, the hash browns, the hash, whatever. And then, I'd like toast, too. And the waiter would say, okay. And then they'd say, what kind of bread do you have? And he'd say, we have white wheat, sourdough, and maybe rye or something. They'd say, okay, I'll take the rye. They only had one type of bread. It's a huge French sourdough loaf. They cut off big, huge hunk and slices, and they put them on the griddle with a little butter, and they make them their own style of Texas toast.
Yipper.
That's the only bread they have. They don't have any other bread. Nobody's ever had any other bread than that bread at the original cafe, Pantry Cafe, open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you originally had to be a convict to get a job there.
Yeah.
And it's just a great spot. The mayor of L.A. bought it and saved it. And then it closed just like last year, but now it's reopened. So that's we have two pieces of good news.
Excellent.
Quick question for you. Is the Formosa still open?
The Formosa is still open. I've taken Nola there. We've had some laughs. I took a really good friend of mine there years ago, who's kind of a very successful gentleman, always dressed to the nines. And we worked together for years. And he said, he was a very successful, very wealthy. And he drove a very expensive car and he had a very expensive watch and suits and the whole nine yards. He was like, it's almost like somebody out of a TV show or a movie. You just couldn't believe it. And he came to me one day and he said, I'm bored to death, buddy, and I need you to take me somewhere I've never been. And I said, well, how about we go here, go there? He goes, no, I know those places.
Yeah.
I said, but have you ever been there? He goes, no, I've never been there, but I know them. I want to go to a place I've never been and I don't know it. And I said, okay. So I said, let's go to the Formosa Cafe. And we walk in, and he's like, this place is a train car.
Yeah.
I said, it is a train car, but now it's a restaurant and a bar.
Yeah.
And I said, and everybody used to come here from John Wayne to Lana Turner. Movies have been shot in here and on and on. Really? Wow, that's great. Let's go sit at the bar.
Okay.
So we sit at the bar. Here's this very, shall I say, voluptuous girl, red hair, tattoos, strapless dress, bare-shouldered. And we snuggle up to the bar, and he's like, howdy there, my beautiful beauty. How are you today? And she's fine. Well, we'd like two vodka martinis. All right. She had the personality of somewhere around either a boulder or a Komodo dragon. And after that, through that first trick, he says to me, buddy, I think we need to go somewhere else because we're not fully appreciated here.
Yeah,
okay, Mike. No problem. No problem.
All right. We're out of time, so we're going to have to leave that one go.
You can finish it after the show goes off.
No, you can finish it next week.
I want to hear the ending.
Well, I do too. But
that was the ending.
Okay.
We left. We went some other places. I'll just tell you that we ended up at the Beverly Hills Hotel out on the patio, and he was dancing and singing to the guy there with the guitar who was serenading the group.
Oh, most excellent. All right.
Yeah, he was really drunk.
That's it for this edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. Remember, costume, scenery, and special effects for today's program were provided by your imagination.
78, 79, 80 O's to you little rattlesnakes in the freezer.
So long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzing's Voices of the West.